California and an allied base somewhere in Australia. Autolite brings you Everything for the Boys, the Command Theater of the Air, starring Mr. Ronald Coleman, his guest, Miss Greer Garson. Everything for the Boys is presented by the Electric Autolite Company and its 22 great manufacturing plants, builders of precision equipment for 35 years, world famous for Autolite spark plugs, batteries, wire, cable, and electrical systems for automotive, aviation, and marine use. Your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
Thank you and good evening. In these intense days when time is a precious thing to all of us, our request play for tonight is especially interesting. For Mr. Balderston's play, Berkeley Square, concerns itself with time in that amazing, mysterious rush of seconds which separate us from yesterday and tomorrow. Now, two young American soldier heroes are waiting for this broadcast at a fighting base somewhere in Australia. And my good friend Greer Garson and I will speak directly to them by special overseas radio. But first, we bring you this radio dramatization by Arch Obler. To the men and women of the United States Army stationed in Australia, we dedicate this half hour.
Stout hearts in men and machines win wars. Men who are not afraid to die. Machines that have the power to respond instantly to every command. This is the all-American team on which the world is backing its freedom. You and I are part of this team. We have pledged to make everything for the boys. Everything our combined ingenuity and skill can invent and build that will give our boys every advantage over the enemy. The farmer, the clerk, the housewife, the miner, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, all of us have joined forces to carry out this pledge. Side by side with us are the men and women of Autolite. In their 22 great manufacturing plants throughout the United States and Canada, they are making stout hearts for machines. Autolite batteries, spark plugs, and electrical systems make up the electrical lifeline in thousands of tanks, jeeps, trucks, and boats. On the fighting front, the name Autolite stands for dependability. And just as Autolite starts something on every front, so here at home, you can count on Autolite spark plugs and batteries to help your car go the duration. Ask one of the thousands of Autolite service stations, your car dealer or serviceman, to help you care for your car for your country. Play, Berkeley Square. The players, Mr. Ronald Coleman, and his guest of the evening, Miss Greer Garson. Before the curtain rises, let me extend the congratulations of all of us to Miss Garson, who yesterday was nominated as an Academy candidate for her splendid work in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's picture, Madame Curie. And now, on with our play.
Have you ever hated this time in which you live? Have you ever said to yourself, why was I born into these blood-stained years? Why couldn't I have lived out my life in the peace and quiet of another time? To you who have cried out these words from a burdened heart, we bring the story of Peter Standish.
It began in this house in Berkeley Square. All my life, I had hated the turmoil and the tensions of this century they call the 20th. So when a relative of mine left me this place, I came here from America and moved in, thankful for the mellowed silence of these old walls. For this house was exactly as it had been in the 18th century when he had built it. This ancestor, whose name was Peter Standish, just as mine is. But his life had been in the quiet graciousness of the 18th century, and mine...
war, war, war.
Again and again, I said to myself, if I could only go back to his time, those leisurely, wonderful days of that other Peter Standish. If I could only go back. Those very words were in my mind as I sat here reading his diary. The pages were yellow, the ink faded. Yet what he wrote in 1784 was more real to me than my own world outside. It was a diary that began with his arrival here from America. to visit his cousin, Lady Anne Pettigrew, and her daughters, Catherine and Helen. On that day, in October of 1784, he had climbed the steps to this house in Berkeley Square and opened the door to the clean, fresh world of those days. I read the words, and suddenly, the words of his diary began to move in front of my eyes. The walls of the room began to lift and fall. I couldn't see. I couldn't think. What was happening to me? And suddenly, there was a voice. A woman's voice.
I bid you welcome, Cousin Peter.
A woman, tall, lovely, standing there.
I trust you had a swift passage from the colonies.
Passage, the colonies. What did she mean?
My sister Kate and my mother will be pleased indeed to know that you are here. All of us have been waiting for you. What a dreary voyage it must have been on that packet. 27 days at sea.
And then I knew what I had wanted so intensely had happened. Time had moved back. I was that other Peter Standish. I was living his life in the 18th century.
Welcome. 10,000 welcomes, dear, dear cousin.
You are Lady Anne?
Why, of course.
Your servant, ma'am.
Of course, you've met your cousin Helen.
Yes, yes, we have met.
Do not be so forward, Helen, dear.
She's lovely.
Yes. And now may I present dear Catherine?
I bid you welcome. Why do you look at me like that?
Oh, I just remembered. According to the diary, you are my betrothed.
Diary? Betrothed? I vow you are the most abrupt man. You have not even asked Mother's permission to pay your addresses.
Indeed you haven't.
No, but it's practically all been arranged. As I remember, the settlement was to be £15,000, wasn't it?
Oh, but we never wrote you. I mean, we talked about it here, but we never...
Mother!
Oh, there's no reason to be disturbed. According to what I remember, we are going to get married and have 3 children.
What?
And one of them dies of smallpox at the age of 7 and is buried in St. Mark's Churchyard.
Mother!
Mr. Standish, what a horrible thing to say.
Mother, Catherine, don't you understand? Mr. Standish is not well. He is but newly disembarked, and doubtless he is very fatigued. Cousin Standish, may I show you to your room?
Thank you very much for helping me out.
Why did you say what you said to them?
Oh, please, don't ask me.
If you wish.
Thank you. You know, as soon as I saw you, I knew that you were someone who... I mean, you will help me, won't you?
How can I help you?
Well, it's all so strange.
Strange?
Yes, I've thought about this so much, and now that I'm really here... Why... Why do you look at me like that?
I don't know.
Is there anything strange about me?
It was raining outside when you came in, yet neither your cloak nor your boots were wet. Who are you? Where do you come from?
Why, I'm your cousin, Peter Standish. I've just arrived here from America.
Of course, to marry my sister Catherine.
Yes, to marry.
Welcome. So that wealthy cousin of yours from the colonies has arrived at last.
Yes, I wasn't home when he arrived, but happily the man is here.
I hear that he's a splendid match for your sister Kate. Some say the man has £25,000 a year.
Well, for the family's sake, I hope so. But I wager there can be no such fortune in the whole of Yankee Doodledom.
And how does your sister Kate feel about the fellow?
I don't quite know, but I know how I feel about him.
Oh, pray tell me.
Well, the man's a child. You should have heard him yesterday going into ecstasies over those Queen Anne chairs that Mother's wanted to throw into the rubbish.
Is that a fact?
This morning I heard him say to Sister Helen, what a delight it is to walk the quiet streets of London in the 18th century and breathe pure air instead of gasoline. What in the world is gasoline?
It was good of you to come walking with me.
Oh, I wanted to.
This rain, wonderful.
Cousin Peter.
Yes, Helen?
You have been with us now for 3 days.
Yes.
Why have you changed?
Changed?
The first day we went walking, there was such excitement in your face. And the second day, there was wonder. And now you look about you as if something were very wrong. What is it?
Well, I came here expecting to find the freedom and graciousness of a wonderful era. I find...
What do you find?
May I ask you a question? Are you afraid of me?
I could not be afraid of somebody that I'm sorry for.
Why are you sorry for me?
Because I think you are somehow greatly disappointed.
No, not with you.
It is late. Cousin Peter, I think we should be returning.
Oh, Helen.
Catherine will be waiting for us.
Yes, Catherine.
Mother, I can't help it. When I'm with him, he makes me afraid.
Catherine, I forbid you to talk like that.
Why shouldn't I? Don't I matter to you? Is it only his bank account that
you're... Catherine, this is disgraceful. Just because the man sees and knows things strangely.
Strangely? The way he looks at us. The way he seems to know what I think and what we're going to do before it even happens. The way he talks about things going to happen. Next year, the year after that.
Once and for all, I forbid you to talk that way about the man you're going to marry.
Marry? Oh, no, Mother, I can't.
Come.
Yes, Mother.
Come here and talk to your sister.
Talk to her about what?
Tom, he frightens you too, doesn't he?
Our Yankee cousin? Oh, not at all. Makes me good and angry.
Angry?
Oh, certainly. He acts as if we were a tribe of barbarians. Why, yesterday at White's Club, he told me the best people there were vulgar, brutal, and dirty.
What?
Why did he say that?
Baths. He insinuated we were dirty. As if we don't bathe at least once a month. And then that woman, you know, the one they burnt this morning for counterfeiting.
Well?
Well, this precious Peter of yours thought we were barbarians for watching. Stupid fool doesn't seem to know the law of the land. Kept talking about such things never happening in the world of tomorrow. Well, what's the matter with that, Kate? Did I say something wrong?
I was just thinking that Peter Standish seems to know too much about tomorrow.
It's been a wonderful ride, Helen.
Yes, and I fear it is our last one.
Last one? Why?
My mother is giving a ball for you and Catherine next week.
Oh, yes, of course, the ball.
I shall have a great deal of work to do.
I remember he wrote about a present you received.
I don't understand you. Please go on.
A cashmere shawl. It was a gift.
A gift? When?
At the ball.
How do you know?
I just know.
Oh, this is what frightens Catherine so terribly.
I know. I can't help it.
You look through us and you seem to know what we think, even what we're going to do next. I don't understand you. I don't understand you, but I wish that I could help you.
Help me?
I think you are very unhappy with us. Although you are so brave and you try to hide it.
Oh, you have helped me. By your sympathy, even though you can't know how much I need it. The days are all right. I go about through old London, and even in the filth and dirt, it's a wonderful experience to be here. But at night, when I lie in bed and think, it all seems a nightmare until I remember you. Helen, you're not like the others. You're...
I'm Catherine's sister. You're betrothed to her. You remember so many things, Peter Standish. Please remember that. Please.
Catherine, you must dance with him.
Mother, I can't.
Well, what is it, Lady Anne? Is the gal upset? Well, how can you blame her? Look over there. The man seems to be quite attracted to his sister. I must say, Helen is looking amazingly lovely tonight.
You dance as beautifully as you, well, as you look.
We should go back to the others.
No, Helen.
Please, Peter.
Oh, when the dance is over.
No.
All right.
Well, it's about time you two came back.
I'm sorry, Mother.
It was entirely my fault, Lady Anne. Please forgive me, Catherine.
It's quite all right. I do not feel like dancing.
Catherine, Peter, Helen, we must come to an understanding of this tonight.
Mother,
come into the other room. The dancing has begun again. They won't miss us. In here. Peter, this was supposed to have been your betrothal ball. Yet you and Catherine have not been together at all evening.
Oh, Mother, it is my fault.
It's no one's fault. I don't want to be with him.
Daughter.
Look at him. He knows what I'm thinking.
Please,
now.
Dear.
He knows what's going to happen
next. Oh, dear. Catherine, don't.
It's all right, Helen. It's just a mood of Catherine's. It will pass. She'll be herself in the morning.
In the morning, I shall be gone from here. I cannot stay in this house with him.
Catherine.
I'll leave London in the morning and I'll not return while he is in this
you
house.
You
mustn't. Peter Standish, I hope I may never set eyes on you again.
Darling.
In God's name, go back to America, if that is
what
where you came
saying?
From. Goodbye.
Catherine. Catherine, be sensible.
Well, Helen.
Please tell me now. How could you speak of things that haven't happened yet, as though they had happened? How could you know things you couldn't know? Look, I was given a present of a cashmere shawl tonight. How did you know that? And all the other things. Please tell me. Tell me. Then it is true. You can see into the future.
Many months. Many years.
That's wonderful.
What?
I love life so. I want to see ahead, too. Because I love it so.
How strange. You in love with the future as I was in love with the... Ah, oh, Helen... It's better just to dream about what's ahead, to dream your dreams, than to really know the truth.
No, Peter, please. The things you'd see in the future, I want to know. Tell me the things that are going to happen.
How can I begin to tell you?
May I stand here close to you?
Helen.
Let me look into your eyes. I'll see the future through your eyes, Peter.
But that isn't possible.
Let me look.
Your eyes. Burning.
I see... white clouds, giant birds flying through them.
Machines with men in them.
And below them, a great cluster of towers. Towers into the clouds. Oh, Peter, is it heaven?
Only a great city across the sea.
A city? An enchanted city, then. A dream city. Is the future all like this? Things reaching up into the sky? Oh, what people and men build such a world of angels, not men.
Angels, not men.
What is it? Why do you turn your eyes away?
You mustn't see it.
No, let me. I see. I see men, a low mist around them. They drive others. Helpless ones before them. And when the helpless ones fall, oh, they are beaten and murdered.
Don't look anymore, Helen.
Lights. Flashing. A great flame opens. Like a flower. Oh, how beautiful. It lights up the city.
Bombs that blew a score of children to pieces.
I can see men and women and little children. Standing before open graves. Streams of flame burning through them. They fall to the ground. These men who killed them. Devils. Demons. Oh, not men. Oh, Peter, Peter. It's not true. Oh.
You saw the future there.
There must be something else. Something good.
Yes, there is something else. Something good to come out of that horror.
Oh, are you sure?
I think I am now. Out of what's wrong in this world came a better time. And somehow the same will happen out of the struggles of my world.
Peter, how can you know the future?
Because I came to you from there.
How could that be?
An accident of time. This isn't my world.
Then you have to return to your world.
No, I want to be with you, Helen. I won't go back.
Yes, you will. I understand now. You came here for the peace and charm of the 18th century. But now you hate us for our filth and ignorance and cruelty and disease.
And you would all hate me as a changeling and a madman.
Yes, if you go on living in my world, it would be a nightmare for you that never ends. You must go back to your own life.
I love you, Helen.
I think I loved you before I ever saw you. In my first dream of you.
I won't go back.
Ah, you will. You will go back, Peter. You have your life to live out in the future.
But I love you.
Each must live through his own time. And you have yours. Don't be too sad there about a girl who has been dead so very long.
I love you.
Someday, in some tomorrow, come to my grave in St. Mark's churchyard. It will be generations after I am dead.
No.
But I will ask for a stone with the letters of my name cut deep, so they won't wear away before you come to me.
Helen.
You will come to me, Peter, alone, and stand by my grave and tell me that you love me, and I will hear you.
I love you now, and in my own time, and in whatever time may come.
I believe you. Hold me, Peter. Kiss me.
Across the great darkness.
Oh, my love. My love. From another world. There has never been a kiss like this since time began.
And in the next moment, I was back here, back in this world, back in this time. It began in this house in Berkeley Square, it ended here. All in a few strange, miraculous moments. I was living in her time, and then I was back in mine. This morning, I went to the churchyard of St. Mark's. It didn't take me long to find out what I was looking for. The letters in the stone, cut deep. Here lies, in confident hope of the blessed resurrection and life eternal, Helen Pettigrew. Beloved younger daughter of Sir William and the Lady Anne Pettigrew. She departed this life June 15th, 1787, aged 23 years. Helen. Helen.
Coleman and his guest, Miss Greer Garson, in Berkeley Square, is dramatized for radio by Arch Obler. The special musical score was arranged and conducted by Mr. Gordon Jenkins. And now, while our Autolite Trans-Pacific hookup is being set up for Mr. Coleman and Miss Garson to speak with the two American soldiers in Australia, Mr. Coleman has a word for you who fight on the home front.
In the current issue of Time, Collier's, and the Saturday Evening Post, you will see a picture of a little blonde 2-year-old girl. She is one of thousands of children whose fathers are fighting for us. And as you look at the picture, you can almost see the puzzled thoughts running through her mind. She knows her daddy is at war. And yes, there's a picture of him in the living room. But to a child 2 years old, a picture is a poor substitute for the real thing. A daddy who brings you candy and dolls and who plays horseback and takes you to the zoo on Sunday afternoon. I think she knows that you and I can help her and is appealing to us with the simple, honest faith of 2 years old. Perhaps she is saying, please bring my daddy home. We can help to do this, and we must. We cannot look the other way. We have an obligation we must keep. of buying all the extra war bonds we possibly can.
All set on your call to Australia, Mr. Coleman.
All right, Greer, grab those earphones. We're doing a kangaroo jump over 6,000 nautical miles from Hollywood to an Allied base somewhere in Australia.
Oh, but Ronnie, it doesn't seem possible for those boys on the other side of the world to talk to us here in Hollywood.
It's an actual fact, Greer. On this program, we have one of the first two-way transoceanic circuits between this microphone and every fighting front in the world. Now, calling Private James Springer and Technical Sergeant John Thompson down under.
Hello, Hollywood. This is Jim Springer.
Hello, Jim.
Is that you, Miss Miniver?
Well, yes.
Just a minute. A friend of mine will say hello. This is Tech Sergeant Johnny Thompson. Hello, ma'am, too.
Oh, just call me Greer, fellows. It'll simplify everything.
Okay.
Say, how are you doing in Australia, men? Getting along okay with the diggers?
Bonzi Cobber. We're doing ding-dong with all the Ulster drovers. Yep, with a planner, too. That's Beacom Law.
Say, Greer, I thought we were talking to American soldiers.
Yeah, you are. That's American. That's Australian slang, Mr. Coleman. It means we're getting along great with the fellas and with the girls, too.
Did you have any trouble learning the lingo?
Oh, sure, but it took them a while to know what we meant when we said, dig me, Jack, and we're a solid tender.
Say, I have a special message for you from your family, Jim. All the Springers and just about everybody else in Denton County, Texas, knows about the part you played in the assault on Arawa and how you were wounded in action.
Tell them I'm okay and not to worry.
All right. Now, is there anything you'd like us to send you from home?
Well, my dad works in the airplane assembly line there in Texas. Sure would like to hear the sound of all the work going on in the plane factory.
Okay, Jim. Listen to the sound of America at work.
There it is, Jim. Fighting planes for you fighting men.
Thanks a lot. There's one more thing.
What's that, Jim?
I'd like to send a kiss to my girl, Pauline Carson in Dallas.
Well, go right ahead. I happen to know she's listening.
Here goes. I'm sending.
And she's receiving.
You know what I'm aiming for, Miss Carson?
What, soldier?
Shorten the distance between the sending and the receiving.
Say, Sergeant Thompson, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Coleman.
We talked to your wife. She's tip-top, and she says your dad in Louisiana is well, too.
That's great.
She's been telling everybody about the action you saw in New Guinea, and she asked us to play you a few bars of your favorite song as a special trans-Pacific gift to her favorite soldier.
All right, Mr. Jenkins, please wrap and ship immediately 10 seconds of Begin the Begin. Receive that all right, Sergeant?
That's wonderful on our anniversary.
One thing more, Johnny. When we talked to your wife, we asked her if she had anything she wanted to say to you.
What'd she say?
Well, just 6 words, Johnny, and Miss Garson will try to repeat them just the way she said them in that charming southern accent. She said,
just tell him I love him.
That goes double.
Now, is there anything you want to say to the folks back home in Louisiana, Johnny?
Yeah, I'd like to say that it's pretty sensational going halfway around the world and then meeting people like the Aussies and finding out how much they're like us.
Like us? In what way, Sergeant?
Well, they want the same things we want. Shower bath, funny people, movies, house, kids, a decent world. We're fighting for the same fight.
Yeah, Johnny, I guess it took a mighty big war to get a lot of decent people marching together.
We're not only marching together, Mr. Coleman. We know where we're marching to. There's somebody else who knows where we're marching. I mean, the people, Berlin, Tokyo.
All right, that's all for now, men.
Here's good night from Hollywood and from 132 million Americans.
Good night, Mr. Arthur and Mr. Coleman. Good night, dear.
Good night, boys. God bless you.
Good luck.